The artist, like the god of the creation, remains within or behind or beyond or above his handiwork, invisible, refined out of existence, indifferent, paring his fingernails. That, of course, is a quote by the famous writer James Joyce from A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. Now, I'm not going to lie and be dishonest here. I barely read that book. I thought it was pretty boring. I just have it in a book of quotes that I have. And I've never been much of a... I'm not a classic reader, you know. I don't blaze through books, you know. I'm not a fast reader. I've always been a very slow reader. And in fact, I remember growing up in school when we had timed reading assignments, I would never finish reading on time. I was always slower than the rest of the class, but I had an incredible reading comprehension. So that means that I would read slowly, but I would absorb every single thing I read and understand it completely, which in my mind is smarter than someone who's a fast reader that doesn't absorb it. Because what's the point of reading if you don't absorb it? I ended up going on to become an English major, English and theater. I got 2 degrees at college, at the College of William and Mary. And I was an English major, and I never finished a book. They made you read a lot of books, turns out. When you major in English, there's a lot of reading involved. And I hated it. So I would do the minimum amount of reading required in order to write an essay or absorb what the book was about. I ended up being a better writer than I was a reader. Again, my reading skills weren't great. I actually had a system that I knew how long it took me to write 1 page of an essay, 1 hour. And that might seem like a long time, but I also did no revisions. I would write 1 page and revise as I went. And I was such a procrastinator back in college that I would time out when it was due. So if the paper was due at 10 a.m., and it was 7 pages, I would start the paper, no joke, at 3 a.m. and wouldn't have finished reading the book, would skip through the book to make some kind of point. And it was awful. I would be crying. I would be so stressed out, but this is what I did to myself, you know. It's like you're still so young in college and you have no skills, no time management skills whatsoever. I mean, during the day I was, you know, taking naps because I had stayed up all night the night before writing a paper. But I also had a professor, Professor Wiggins, who was a Shakespeare professor, and he was notoriously really hard and really mean. And people would, like, drop his class after, like, the first 2 classes of the semester because he would scare them off. But I don't know what it was about him. I just stayed in the class, and I kind of got on his good side, I guess, because I really liked Shakespeare. And I was very into it, and I loved I took Latin in high school. And Latin required a lot of translating. And Shakespeare's similar. That actually, to fully appreciate it, you actually have to approach it as a text that you need to translate. Because so the language is so old that you actually don't know what they're saying unless you actually understand the context, what those words meant back then. And then they really come to life. I mean, Shakespeare's good just on its own. It's beautifully flowery language. The stories are so strong. But then when you really get into the context of it, damn. That shit is good. Anyway, I've talked about Shakespeare before, but the reason I bring it up is because Wiggins taught me, like I wrote an essay one time and he was like, this is really good. You know, it's really great to bring in, he said, I don't remember if he said it to the class or he said it to me directly. He's like, if you bring in a reference, a literary reference to another time period or another book you're reading, and you weave that into your essay, you're going to make your essay so much better. So he would say, you know, if you're reading a Shakespearean play and you're noticing a certain imagery is being used, like flowers, and then you, in your other class, you're reading a William Wordsworth poem and there's a lot of imagery with flowers, why not write an essay talking about how both of those writers use flowers in different ways and then you got yourself an A+ essay. Well, I took that to heart, and I did that with every essay after that, and I'm not joking, A+ every fucking time. I'm also a great writer, and I don't make spelling errors. So, boom, motherfucker. Even though it, but doing that, just so you know, I didn't have to finish any of the books. I just had to find some kind of, I would just come up with a theory and just bullshit my way through it. And teachers loved it. They were like, oh my God, this is so original. Wow. You know, never thought of myself as a bullshitter, but I think that's what I was doing. But also I was really enjoying literature. Okay. Anyway, the point is, James Joyce wrote A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. He also wrote, Finnegan's Wake and Ulysses. Now, a lot of people say Ulysses is like the best book ever written. I don't know, because I didn't finish it. And I also thought that was really boring. So anyway, I'm like a smart idiot, you know? It's my favorite combination. I think that means, I always joked about being from Virginia. You're just Southern enough to be Southern, but you're Northern enough to be Northern. So you're just sort of a mix of really stupid and smart. Although Northern and Southern, as we know in this country, even in America too, has nothing to do with smart or stupid, but there were a lot of stereotypes that people from the deep South were stupid. Anyway, don't at me. That's a phrase that they used to say back in America 1 on Twitter. Like somebody, some sassy person would be like, I think ice cream is trash. Don't at me. Like, it was always been an opinion that, like, nobody fucking cares about, and you think you're being so funny. Like, I think popcorn is really so awful. Don't at me. And then sometimes they'd twist it. They'd be like, I think Waterworld is the best movie ever made. You can go ahead and at me. At me, of course, means reply to me. So you're basically saying, I don't care what you think. Don't reply to me. Don't even talk to me. This is my opinion. And no, I will not be engaging in discourse over it. Or you might twist it and go ahead and say something to me. Go ahead and at me. I'm not going to care. It won't change my mind. So there's just, you know, some lingo from America 1 that sometimes I try to reincorporate back into my life here just for nostalgic purposes. But anyway, the quote that I read was about being an artist, which of course I am, many times over in many different mediums. In terms of your work and your creations and remaining invisible behind it, I really went through an experience back in America 1 when I opened my Etsy shop. Now, Etsy had been around for a long time at the time, and I, as you know, was super, and still am, very into cross-stitching and other crafts, and I decided, you know, why not make, you know, I have all this stuff, and I can tell my family is starting to get annoyed with the amount of cross-stitch I was gifting them. And they're like, oh, thanks, Sarah, thanks, Oh, I'll put this on the wall of cross stitch. I don't really need any more of it, but thank you so much. So I made a bunch of stuff and I put it on Etsy and I called the shop Bobo's Nook. You know, if it was still around, I would, and anyone was listening to this, I would say, please go to Bobo's Nook. Like, go to etsy.com/shops/Bobo's Nook, BOBOSNOOK. But since we're in America too and Etsy is gone, you know, forget that. But, you know, if we were in America 1, I would be like, please go there and buy the remaining items. Now, the whole purpose of the Etsy shop for me was to pay for, one, because it was fun. I totally did it for fun. It was definitely not a money-making scheme, but I wanted to make the money back for all the vintage cross-stitch patterns that I had spent an enormous amount of money on. I wanted to pay for my habit, essentially. And I think I successfully did that. You know, when I first launched the store, I put out just a few items, you know. Some cross-stitch original designs, which was a very big challenge for me because I'm not a visual artist. I can't really draw. So I had to do some simple rudimentary designs. and I did some t-shirts, which didn't sell for some reason. Nobody liked the fucking t-shirts, so you know what? Go fuck yourself. Okay, yeah, maybe it's not your size. Maybe you don't want an eggplant on your shirt because now it symbolizes dick. But I thought that was funny. Maybe it takes a certain type of person to want to wear that shirt. And I guess that person doesn't shop on Etsy. I don't know. I made some cute shirts. It was very difficult to cross-stitch on t-shirts. Go ahead and try it. Tell me how hard that is. It's hard as fuck, okay? T-shirt fabric is really stretchy. And if you've ever cross-stitched before, you usually cross-stitch on a very sturdy fabric known as Eta cloth or linen or something that has grid to it, you know, some hold, and you can use the little holes as a grid to get your stitches in line. But no, on t-shirts, you got to put a backing on, you got to iron it on, and then you got to put a grid on top, and you got to stitch it, and you got to use a really sharp needle, and you keep stabbing yourself, and it really fucking hurts, and you got to pull, and it's like a pain in the fucking ass to do these t-shirts, and nobody's fucking buying them. Maybe I overpriced them. But anyway, one good thing about the t-shirts, though, is when you put the little grid on, I posted this video on Instagram because I needed people to understand how satisfying it was. You put this little grid of, like, very thick string. It's almost like a mesh. And that you use that basically as your grid on the fabric so you can your stitches will be even. And you only do this if you're doing cross-stitch. If you're just embroidering, you don't really need the grid. So I use this grid, and then when you're done, you get it a little bit wet and it kind of softens, and you use tweezers and you pull out each thread of the grid from underneath your stitches. And when you do it, it's just the most, truly one of the most satisfying experiences I've ever had. And I still do it here at the cabin sometimes when I'm looking to get a little excited, you know. You pull out each thread, it makes a little squeaky noise, like, and it's just so satisfying, to the point where you're, I guess it's similar to ASMR, AMSR, ASMR, whatever. It's something that people get when they, like, when a woman brushes her hair quietly, they get full body chills. It's a whole world that other podcasts have covered in great detail, but, and I don't have it really, but I guess if I did have it, this would be the thing that triggered it, because I would get like full body chill, like a body orgasm every time I would pull out with tweezers. Just something about tweezers, you know. Other people like to watch videos of people popping zits and shit. I'm not that person, okay? Definitely was never that person. This is more my jam. No bodily fluids involved, but just like that really satisfying pluck. Okay, so anyway, I'm on a real tangent here. So anyway, I opened the Etsy shop, and I decided to try out some different things. Some stuff was based on my stand-up. I did this little sign that said inspirational quotes on rustic pieces of driftwood in multiple fonts, and that was referencing a stand-up joke, but I thought it stood alone, and that was one of the most popular items that I sold. But I also made these little teeny tiny cross-stitch hoops. One, I did one that was like, I had an idea. It was like, what if I did two and the word fuck went all the way across, like F-U-U-U, and then it cuts off on the hoop and then it starts on the second hoop. So it's kind of like, fuck, like it gets that kind of across, like, fuck, like, and people really loved this one. And I only had one and it sold immediately. And then I realized like people were so excited about it that I needed to sell more. So I posted it as a made-to-order item. Now, this is where the trouble began. What I was using to make these little things was this little kit that you buy at Joann Fabrics, and it came with two little hoops. So basically, one kit would make one fuck set, and they sold them at Joann's, and I went ahead like a fool and listed like 20 of them, like made to order. So you can control on Etsy, you could control like, okay, I'm selling 5 of these. They're not made yet, but I will make up to 5. So you can kind of control it. So if a shit ton of people ordered it, you're not like, oh my God, I have to quit my job to fulfill these Etsy orders, you know. And we're not talking much of a profit margin on these things. So I didn't want to be overwhelmed. So I thought, 20, it'll be fine. Well, here's the thing I didn't calculate, which was these little kits are hard as fuck to find. And Joann's only sold like 3 of them, and then they were out of stock, and none of the other Joann's had them. And it was a nightmare because literally like 2 days later, I mean, this is just really poor planning on my part. Like, 2 days later, I was leaving for a month to go to London. So basically, I had to find these like little, so I'm driving all over LA. I'm going online. I'm trying to figure out how the fuck to get these little hoops and to not like break the bank and lose money on it. So anyway, it was this huge ordeal. And at the end of the day, it kind of pissed me off because creatively speaking, I'm in the camp of like sassy cross stitch. I actually find it kind of annoying. And it was very trendy back then. It was like, you know, it would be like cross stitch, like eat my pussy, you know, like that would be a cross stitch hoop that would be very popular online, or like, you know, like little feminist sayings. And it was very trendy. And a lot of it was really cute. But it was just too much. It was sort of oversaturated and, to me, was a little bit lazy and kind of disrespected the art of embroidery and cross-stitch, because there's some people out there doing some really great stuff. Now, I'm not putting myself in that category. I can make some really beautiful cross-stitch creations. I'm working on one right now that's a beautiful scene of a sunset over a lake and a mountain with a tree, and it's really fucking huge. And it's really beautiful, but I didn't design it, okay? So I'm just following a pattern. So anyway, I reluctantly made some sassy cross-stitch, and of course, that's the shit everybody wanted. You know, they didn't want my cute eggplant thing. Fuck that. They wanted... Fuck. That's what everybody wanted, so I basically killed myself trying to get these stupid little mini cross-stitch hoops. Learned a lot. Learned that actually Blick.com has incredible deals on not just art supplies, but crafting supplies. Way cheaper. You can get that stuff for bulk. Way, like hoops and all the things you need, way cheaper than Joann's. And I am a loyal Joann customer. And I even put S on it. It's technically Joann, not Joann's. But I call it Joann's for some reason because I'm an old woman. And I was a huge Joann's fan. I would go there every day. The people that worked there knew me. I'm like, what you working on today? I never got to the point where they knew my name, which, you know, I guess that's a lot to expect from a Joann worker, to know your name. They don't give a fuck. They're just trying to ring you up and scan your coupons. Anyway, never shop at Joann without a coupon. Don't be a fool. The Joann's apps has coupons every single day, the same ones. 30% off your entire order. 40% off one item. Never pay full price at Joann's. What are you doing, you fucking idiot? Anyway, this episode has purpose and a real clear through line. I actually think it does. It's about creation and art. That's what this whole podcast is about. It's about the mind of a really deeply intelligent artist. So anyway, my Etsy shop was phenomenal, and I enjoyed every step of it, except for them finding those mini cross-stitch things, the situation I got myself into with those stupid fuck ones. I really enjoyed fulfilling. I liked packing everything, printing out the shipping label, all of it. Very satisfying for me. It involved all the things I love. And I loved as a kid. It involved crafting, of course. It involved having your own shop. I mean, there truly was nothing I loved more growing up than playing store. Pretending that I owned a store and have a little cash register, putting things out for sale. I remember one time my sister and I, we shared a room. We had two other siblings and, of course, our parents. And we all of our rooms were on the second floor of our house. And my sister and I came up with a brilliant business scheme, which we had somehow come into possession. I don't know where we got them, and I don't know how we got them, but we had come into possession of probably 1,000 mini golf pencils, like those little pencils you use at Putt-Putt or whatever. We had a huge tin of them, and we were like, this is genius. Let's sell these, you know, for like a quarter a pop. And we made a little sign, and we put it on the tin. And then we just sat it outside of our bedroom door. A lot of foot traffic, a lot of customers, potential customers walking by. It was a really good business plan, and nobody bought any pencils. So Anyway, loved playing store of any kind. My mom had her own thrift store. It wasn't until I was a teenager, but it was a thrift store, which was part of this charity that she ran called Pennies for Heaven in Richmond, Virginia. And, the whole mission of the charity was to feed and clothe and provide for the underprivileged of Richmond, Virginia, including people experiencing homelessness and people on the real poverty line there. And I loved working at that store. It was like my childhood game come to life. We had our own store. We sold stuff. My mom even did Storage Wars. This is way before Storage Wars, okay? Storage Wars was obviously a reality show. Where people go to storage units and they open the garage door and you look into it. You can't see anything and you bid on it. My mom was doing that in the 90s. And we thought it was so weird. We were like, how did you even figure out that you could do this? And she would go and bid on these storage units and get all the shit, bring it to the thrift store, sell it, and then whatever money she made from the sort of regular Goodwill type thrift store type income, she would use that to then funnel back into buying coats, food, shoes for the homeless. It was really great. Anyway. Love playing store. So Etsy hit on that. It hit on crafting. It hit on store, playing store. It hit on office supplies because I had to use all my different office supplies to ship the items. So I had bubble wrap, envelopes, tape. Guys, somebody's a nerd. In America too, it's totally different now. You know, we're limited to Drone Mall, which of course has lots of options, lots of different little stores within it. But it's not that same satisfying feeling of, you know, back in the day when you would sell your shit and then or you're like a yard sale, you get your cash, you pile your cash up. Because money, of course, now is so different, you know. Towards the end of America One, we really started to see the rise of cryptocurrency, which was like Bitcoin, Ether. There was another one. There was one called Dogecoin. I mean, they were just fucking ridiculous. But cryptocurrency was like a huge kind of gold rush type thing. And I mean, this is me being probably really ignorant, but I feel like it was started by a bunch of nerds on 4chan. I have no idea. No offense to 4chan or Reddit, but like, it just seems like that type of person started it. They were like, dude, let's make our own money so that we don't have to like use like the money that women touch. You know, I don't know. Oh, they started this thing called Bitcoin and then all this other cryptocurrency popped up. And it turns out that it almost destroyed the earth because required so much electricity to create. Now, somebody tried to explain to me one time how Bitcoin works, and I almost had a seizure because it was so confusing. I mean, like, there's people who spend all day mining Bitcoin, aka writing the code or something. I don't know. It's so confusing. But anyway, nowadays, now all of those early cryptocurrencies totally collapsed and people lost their entire life savings. It was very sad, but also kind of like, what did you think was going to happen? It wasn't regulated by the FDIC and like, you know, you're really just out in the Wild West, like putting all your money in currency. These are people from like who knows about investing in currencies? Like that is a whole market that is advanced. And this is like, you know, like a guy working at Jersey Mike's, you know, no offense, that's a great job if you can get it, but like you'd have no experience in investment in currency and playing that market. That is a whole nother, that's not even basic stock market shit. That's a whole nother level. Anyway, so a lot of people lost their money, but it ends up that a really little known cryptocurrency kind of rose from the ashes. And part of the reason that it rose was because somebody had developed a way to create it using very little energy. And so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a hazard to the environment, and it was real eco-friendly. But unfortunately, it had a really shitty name, but it's just what became our new currency because they had to get rid of paper money. because too many people were like burning it in a sort of protest because cryptocurrency, and it was this whole thing. But so anyway, the name of the money we use now is, it's really embarrassing, but it's called Fuckbuck. And so the people who came up with Fuckbuck was a group of guys who had a very popular podcast right at the end of America One. It was called Pablo Thughole. Now, a lot of people said it was a ripoff of Chapo Trap House, which was a very popular podcast in America One. I never listened to it because once someone described it to me, I was pretty sure that it wasn't going to be something I would enjoy. And I think that's just because they used the words dirtbag left to describe it, alt left, which I know that those people don't like that term, but that is the term that was used. And I had some run-ins with these types of people online before, and their fans. I'm sure the guys that ran the podcast were very nice, and I think they have a they had a woman on there too. But my point being, someone described it to me, and I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not for me. I didn't listen to Money Podcasts in America One. Why was I going to listen to that one with a bunch of dudes making fun of politics in a way that was really like cutthroat and brutal? I'm not sure that I was, I always think I was a little too sensitive for that. So anyway, Pablo Thughole came along when the Chapo Trap House podcast collapsed under its own hipness. Like, it was so cool that it ended up destroying itself. And then a few of the main fans of Chapo Trap House formed a new podcast, sort of like a fan cast called Pablo Thughole. Of course, then it evolved into its own thing. And I would say the type of person that would listen to Pablo Thughole was a Jill Stein voter. And I don't mean in the 2016 election. I mean the type of people who voted for Jill Stein in 2020. Now, that's a whole new level of crazy, in my opinion. Especially after we found out that Jill Stein was basically that she was a Russian spy. And we found this out, and then people were still voting for her because they, like, refused to believe it. Anyway, it was this whole thing. But the people who listened to Pablo Thughole, there was these dudes, there was all these people on Twitter, and they were like, I guess it was a symbol that they were socialists or something, but they used to put rose emojis in their Twitter handle. And as soon as I saw a rose emoji in my mentions, I would be like, oh shit, here it comes. I'm about to be called a neoliberal by some guy who just graduated from high school and thinks he understands global politics. Not that I do, but anyway, these people, the Pablo Thughole people, were a whole new step where they had the shit emoji in their names. And that was because they were trying to show solidarity, or like, I'm a member of the Jill Stein shit party, because that's the new party she started. She was like, I'm starting a new political party. It's called the shit party. And basically, we just throw everything to shit, because then we can rebuild it. It was sort of like Susan Sarandon was behind it as well. Anyway, I'm trying to be like really funny politically speaking right now, and it's not working because I forget all the things that happened. Too many things happened around that time that I'm not sharp on my references and jokes. And all these jokes have been made before. So anyway, Pablo Thughole, very popular podcast. Those guys, to help fund their podcast and their elaborate lives, they all had very severe cocaine habits, apparently. They started a new cryptocurrency, and they called it Fuckbuck. Now, I wish they hadn't called it that, because it ended up being, Fuckbuck ended up being the best cryptocurrency, and we ended up having to use it. And then it became everything that America had to pay with. They had to pay with Fuckbuck. They'd be like, oh, how much is this car going to cost? Well, it's about, you can put 2,500 fuckbucks down, you know, or it's like, hey, can I borrow 2 fuckbucks from you? Like, it was just so gross. And I hate the fact that we as Americans now have to use fuckbuck as our currency, and the dollar's gone. That was a normal sounding name, but now we all have to use this. And some people say FB because they don't want to curse. They're not cussing types. And that's fine. I respect that. But it's just embarrassing. But it was kind of to the point in America One that we'd embarrassed ourselves so much that there was almost no way to be embarrassed anymore. And that was a, you know, obviously Donald Trump was a huge part of that. But I mean, look at all the shit that we did. I mean, it was a huge embarrassment. And I think we got the currency name that we deserved. So anyway, it was great for rappers, though, when they wanted to rap about their how much money they had. Fuck Buck was really good for their rhymes. I'm not going to even try to rap, but it would be something like, you know, I got so many fuck bucks. I got nothing but hoes to suck my dick. I'm not a rapper. Not by a long shot. Look, Fuckbuck is better than a lot of the other cryptocurrencies that were starting to bubble up towards the end of the first cryptocurrency crash, the FCCC. First cryptocurrency crash, the FCCC, happened towards the end of America One, obviously. Bitcoin, Dogecoin, all those, Ether, all those fell apart. As I mentioned, people lost their savings. And then all these other new cryptocurrencies were popping up to try and take the place. Of course, Fuckbuck was the one that took over and ended up becoming our actual official currency. But there was a lot of other ones that came up, and the names were like, you know, Booty Bill. That didn't work out. Scrote Note. Clams, which everyone was just like, that's gross. We're not investing in clams. There was Greenback, which people didn't really like those. That was just too normal sounding. If the cryptocurrency sounded normal, people didn't want it. They were like, oh, that sounds normal. There was a lot of ones that were just straight up racial slurs because, as I mentioned, people on 4chan and Reddit were the ones that would invent a lot of these new ones. And as we know, a lot of those people that hung out on those message boards were full on racist, and they thought it would be funny. But it's like ironically funny. I'm not actually racist. It's like, no, you're racist. Of course, as we know, all the shitheads that lived on 4chan and Reddit and spent their time on there ended up having to come to a reckoning because everyone's Reddit posts and 4chan posts were published in a giant book. And so you could look up, you know, if you were about to hire someone, you know, oh, it's Kevin Fritz. Thank you, Kevin. Welcome to the interview. Tell me about yourself. Well, I have about 5 years work experience. I'm skilled in Excel, Keynote, you know, whatever other programs are needed. And I'm a really hard worker, a fast learner. And my biggest weakness is that sometimes I work too hard, you know, and that's a great interview. But then after the interview, the HR person, the interviewer would look up Kevin Fritz in the great 4chan Reddit compendium encyclopedia, and then they would find out everything he'd ever posted on 4chan and Reddit. And 9 times out of 10, if they had posted on there, they had posted something that would really make it really hard to want to hire them. Something racist, something sexist, some combination of the two. And I know I'm sweeping with a broad brush. I'm sure there were a lot of people who were very nice who spent a lot of time on those message boards, and there were parts of it that were completely benign, but there was also some really shitty parts of those websites that I don't understand why you would participate in it if you weren't a piece of shit. Again, rambling here. So anyway, all those cryptocurrencies never came to be, and we landed on Fuckbuck, and here we are, paying for our, you know, almond milk with 4 fuck bucks. I mean, that's just, first of all, that's a great deal on almond milk. Organic, you know, But please. Well, what's happening at the cabinet? I can tell you that I've been, the weather has been really beautiful. It's that crisp, but yet slightly humid, late summer feel, which has become more and more year-round at this point because of global warming. It's disturbing when global warming produces climate that you actually enjoy. Just this sort of like that summer night, you know, especially in the foothills of the Appalachians. It's just the best feeling. It's warm. The air is a little warm. It's slightly humid, but not to the point where you're uncomfortable. But there's that smell in the air of, there's a word for it, and I can't remember it right now, but it's the smell of the forest floor. It's that decaying first layer of the forest floor that I love. It's that smell. Slightly moist. It's just a little bit of death, I guess I like. But which, of course, brings forth new life. And it's that crossover. It's the smell of crossover. It's a leaf dying, and it's getting to that point where it's filled with microbes, and it's its whole other ecosystem, and it's part of the decomposition, which then creates the conditions necessary for a new tree to grow. And it's beautiful. And I love that smell. And that's the foothill of the Appalachians right now, which is that kind of smell right around sunset. And the crickets are out. The cicadas are coming out. It's so beautiful. And then the temperature starts to drop and it gets a little misty. And it's just the best. I love it so much. But the weather's been great. And because of that, I've been sitting out on my screen porch, which I installed a few months ago. Nothing better than a screen porch, you know? You got to get the type of screen that keeps the mesquites out. And is that how they... And I'm trying to speak like more like a local Appalachian mountain person. The mesquites or skeeters? Skeets? Growing up, we used to have these bugs that would like get into your skin and itch really bad, and they were called chiggers, which is so... Let's not use that word. It rhymes with another word that I don't ever want to think about or have it come out of my mouth. So why do we have to call them chiggers? It sounds so offensive. And probably somebody is using that as a racial term of some kind to describe a different race. I don't know. I'm not going to even conjecture. I feel bad for even thinking about it. But why did we have to call them that? Couldn't we have called them by their scientific name? Trombiculidae? Or was it Trombiculidae? Either way. Oh my God. They are so disgusting. Have you ever looked up at a picture close up of a C word? I'm just going to call them C words because I can't say it anymore. It sounds so offensive. A C word, they're these truly tiny red bugs. They look like a little red alien, and they dig down under your skin and they itch like a motherfucker. Anyway, so I sit on my screen porch to avoid the contact with the C words. I should just call them cunts. Bug cunts. This episode is, I apologize. It's a complete fucking mess. I start with James Joyce. I end with cunt bugs. But that's what's happening at the cabinet. I'm going to go sit out on my screen porch. And I think from the smell in the air, there might be a little thunderstorm coming. Which, bring it on. I love that shit. All right. Bye.